Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Your host, Greg, will have smart discussions with friends, experts, and thought leaders on customer experience, transformation, and leadership. Please follow this podcast on your preferred platform. I am sure you will enjoy the next episode with the guest I selected for you. I had the pleasure to interview Steven van Bellingham at the CX Summit in January 2024. It was an outstanding fireside chat about his latest book, A Diamond in the Rough. Thank you very much to Bostius to make it happen and allowing me to reshare the interview on my podcast.
Hi, Steven. How are you?
Greg, I'm good. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
I am super thrilled to start this discussion, this fireside chat together with you. You are speaking in your book about diamond. What does it mean, diamonds, in the context of your book?
Well, one of the things that I've seen in the 20 years that I've been in the CX profession is that almost every single company out there has a desire to become customer-centric, but it's only like a handful of companies that actually succeed in being customer-centric. Most companies that I meet have the potential, have the wish, but it doesn't happen. So I call them diamonds in the rough. They have the potential to be beautiful, to be shiny, but somehow they get stuck somewhere. So in this book that I call The Diamond in the Rough, I want to show people, I want to guide people to transform themselves from a diamond in the rough into becoming a beautiful, shiny diamond that would be worthy of a beautiful ring. That's the metaphor behind that.
That's great. And you know me a bit, and therefore I like also a bit more personal things. Who brought you to this idea of diamonds? I think there are in the first page is really an interesting story.
Most people that know me think that I got it from Disney, because a lot of people know that I'm a big Disney fan. So a lot of people think about this quote in the movie Aladdin, where you see Jafar going to the Cave of Wonders, and the cave says, "I need a diamond in the rough." That's what most people think, but that's not it. That didn't happen. I actually got the idea from my oldest son. His name is Siba. He's 14, and he's really into science. So all his time on social media, he looks into science channels, YouTube shorts about science. Everywhere we go, he wants to go to science museum. So one day he came to me, and I was working on a presentation, and he talked me through how a diamond how it starts, right? From carbon, how it becomes a rough diamond, and how you can make it a jewel. And he was explaining that to me. And I was like, wow, this is exactly the metaphor I need for this client. So I started to use that metaphor in my presentation. The day after I tried it out, it worked. People enjoyed it. So I said, okay, we're going to continue with this. So he brought me the inspiration, and I asked him to write a foreword in my book. And I think he did an amazing job. So I'm super proud.
I can confirm that. And I think you are a proud dad that your son brought you to this great, great idea. When we're speaking about families and so on, I think loyalty is quite clear what it's relevant for us in family. But sometimes in business, loyalty is much more reactive than proactive. And you are explaining in your book extremely well this concept. Could you please elaborate on that?
Yeah, of course. I think it's one of the issues that we have completely wrong in marketing and in customer experience. The way that we look at loyalty is super transactional, and the effort starts from the customer. Right? Simply put, you have to fly 50 times with an airline, and then they fast track you through security. You have to buy 10 breads, and the 11th is for free. So it's transaction-based and effort-based from the client. So we believe that a client has to show a lot of effort first, and then they get a little thingy back, and we call that loyalty. That's not how loyalty works, Greg. I mean, imagine that you would do that with your partner at home. That wouldn't end well. Loyalty, if you look at the core of the principle, it's an emotional bond between people, or between people and a location, people and their dog. It's an emotional relationship. So I've been doing a lot of research on how you can create real loyalty. And I think it fundamentally starts with asking the different question. And now a lot of the people who are watching this, they ask the question, how can we make our customers more loyal to us? I think you need to turn that around and ask yourself the question, how can we show more loyalty to our customers? And basically, how does loyalty start in a business relationship? Two things. You need to have the basics right. You have to make sure that, you know, it's a fluent, convenient relationship. The product expectations are met, and so on and so on. That's one thing. And the other thing is that you add positive emotion to that so that you, and I think this is something that we underestimate. Every customer experience guy and girl that I meet now is over-focused on customer journeys. Super transactional, but it's good. You need that transactional part, but it's only one half of the story. Second half is trying to figure out which moments in those customer journeys are the most important ones. Decide at the end of a journey, how can you make that more memorable? So define the right moments, add emotion to that. That also brings loyalty to the game. So making sure the basics are right, adding emotions at the right moments, that at the end of the game ends up with loyalty.
Steven, we all like chocolate, and therefore I think it's time to share this great example in the book.
Yeah, I are you referring to Neuhaus as an example? Yeah, well, Neuhaus is one of the more premium Belgian chocolate brands. They basically invented the whole idea of Belgian chocolate. It was a pharmacist who said, I need to motivate people that they swallow their pills, so I'm going to add some chocolate around it. That's how Belgian chocolate really took off, thanks to Neuhaus. They are one of those companies that really understands that loyalty begins with them. So they have this idea that is very simple. As soon as you become a customer with them, so if you buy one chocolate, you're a customer, and then you're part of their community. And as a reward, every time that they have an innovation, you will get two free chocolates. About 10 times a year, they will send you a message and say, hey, Greg, we get these new innovations. We would love the fact that you would try them out. If you go to our stores, you get two chocolates for free. And there are no strings attached. So you don't have to buy anything else. It's not that you have to buy kilos and kilos of chocolates first. No, you're a customer, so we want you to try this out. And, you know, if you think about this, Greg, it's 500,000 people in the community. 10 times a year, they give two chocolates away for free. So we're talking about potentially giving away 10 million Neuhaus chocolates, which is an insane amount. So if you would calculate this in a business case, the answer would always be a firm no. We cannot do this. But still, Neuhaus did it. Why? Because they know that not everyone picks up the free chocolates. But they also know that more than half of the people who pick up the free chocolates, they buy something on top of it. It becomes a pull towards their stores and people get excited about it. And then they buy something else on top of it. They don't have to, but they do it because they feel appreciated as a customer. So for me, loyalty is an example of that. And Neuhaus is a brilliant company in executing that in real life.
Thank you, Steven, for this great example. And what you're sharing, it's the reality. Our brain is divided in two pieces. One is the emotional side and the other is the more rational side. If we calculate business cases, it's only the emotional side, but on the other side, it is the rational side.
Yeah.
Rational side, but at the end, customer take decisions and buy stuff from an emotional point of view.
And you're speaking... sorry to interrupt you, but I think that a lot of businesses and CX professionals are over-focused micro ROI. Of course, there's no doubt about it that a company needs to be profitable, grow in the long run. That's the end result. But we've changed in some sort of creatures that where we feel that every second that we invest in a customer needs to have a positive ROI. And I don't agree. I think that you should have macro ROI. But that now and then, it's perfectly fine to be micro ROI negative. You can do something exceptional for a customer that costs you more than it brings back. But if you know that it deepens and strengthens the relationship, then it works in the long-term game. And that is perfectly fine to do that. Don't over-focus micro ROI, because otherwise you never do cool things. You never do what really makes sense to do for a customer, because you're calculating and you're not thinking as a real human anymore.
Exactly. And on the emotional side, I think you are sharing this interesting topic around empathy in action. How do you believe empathy plays a role in transforming customer experience? And perhaps also share an example about that.
I love how you say that, empathy in action. That's a really cool way to say it. I called it effective empathy, but this is really cool. Empathy in action. I love this. You know, what it's about is that everyone talks about empathy. Everyone who's in the field of customer experience uses empathy like every 10 seconds. But reality is that no one really knows how to bring it to action. It's too vague for the business world. So that's why I start to think about how can we make this more tangible? How can we make it more actionable, more effective? very simply put, you need two things. You need fast feedback loops so that you get data, insights, feedback from the market rapidly. But that's not enough. You need to combine that with fast action loops so that you react quickly to certain demands or certain feedback that you get. You know, I guess that more than 75% of the people who are watching this right now have some sort of a customer feedback loop installed. They probably have NPS tracking or customer satisfaction tracking, different kinds of data. That's not the difficult part. Difficult part is to combine that with fast action. The problem is that too many people are playing manager, which means that they, you know, want to do the strategic thing. So they look at the customer feedback, they come up with three big trends, and underneath those trends, you have a number of projects, and then everyone has a business case, and then you have to present that. And reality is, in the first 9 months, nothing happens. So it's a complete waste of time with zero impact to the market. The art of empathy in action is to keep things small so that you look at customer feedback, and that you ask yourself, what are the small things? What are the 50 small things that we can change in the course of the next 1, 2, 3 months so that the customer feels that you're doing things, so that your employees, the team feels like, hey, we're improving things. It's going fast. It's one win after the other. And then you get a whole different ballgame. So effective empathy is a combination of fast feedback with fast action. And to make that happen, understand the art of keeping things small.
Do you have an example from the book that you would like to share?
One of my favorite examples here is an hotel in Dubai. It's called Atlantis the Palm. CEO, there's a guy named Tom Roelens. He's a Belgian guy, just like me. And he's doing an outstanding job. And I had the pleasure to work with him and talk to him. And he explained to me, he said, you know what we have? He says, we have this daily CX ritual, a daily CX ritual. Which means that every single day, they look at the questions that came in from guests of the hotel the day before, and they look for questions where they don't have process for, where they don't have a fixed procedure for. And then they look for those questions that they don't have procedure for, but that also could be valuable for other guests in the future. If they identify those, then that same day, they install a new process to make sure that if they get the question again, which they assume will happen, that they can help that customer in a very fluent way. So on a daily basis, they optimize their processes based on daily feedback that they get, which is insane. If you think about it, it's super, super crazy. Now, if some people think, yeah, but that's not feasible for me, I want to come back to my friends from Neuhaus. They heard this story from me and they said, we need to do something that works in our organization. So they started a customer council. And it comes together every 6 weeks. It's chaired by the CEO. Every crucial person from the organization that can help in implementing certain ideas is part of that council. It's maybe 8 people. Every 6 weeks, they come together and they talk about 3 customer projects. 3 projects that can be small, that can be a little bit complex. But the goal is that by the time of the next meeting, 6 weeks later, that project is fulfilled, that it has been executed. If not, they talk about it again and they say, okay, what was the barrier? What was the roadblock? Who can help to remove that roadblock? Who can help here? And then by the next meeting, it should be fixed. They've been doing this now for more than 7 years. Can you imagine the amount of projects and roadblocks they removed to improve their customer service and customer experience? So I think the tip here is find a rhythm in your organization where you can look at feedback, figure out a way how you can speed up implementation. And that will bring the empathy in action that you refer to.
2 questions pop up to my mind if you're sharing this example. Let's start with the first one. Putting a small group together, that sounds like a community. And you see my background, people know me. I really like football or soccer. And you're sharing also one example or several examples, but the one that I mean is about women football in the USA, it's soccer. Could you please quickly share the importance of communities and this great example that you found out?
Sure. Well, this links back to the whole loyalty game. If you really succeed in creating loyalty, you end up with a community of people who want to support you, who want to talk about you, and that will buy from you eventually. And as you mentioned, Greg, I had the pleasure to meet the management team of a football club, soccer team in the US, in Miami. No, in LA, sorry. It's called Angel City. it's an amazing story because it's a new team. It was started with a number of female actresses that really wanted to have a football team, not because of the football team, but basically to promote and to advocate for human female rights in sports. So they thought it wasn't fair that, you know, the sponsor deals were bigger with male football compared to female football, you know, the kind of discussions that happen a lot in society. So they decided we're going to fight for female rights in soccer, in sports, and we're going to use a soccer team for that. And it was created, I think, in 2019 or 2020. Super popular right now. The stadium is sold out for the next 7 years. They have more people in that stadium than what David Beckham was playing in LA. Super popular. And a big amount of the money that they make is going back to really promote female sports rights. And they were actually the first team that succeeded because of this mission to get a deal for the sponsor of their jersey to get the same amount of money as what the male team had in LA. So that was a big breakthrough. And, you know, it's a whole community of people supporting that, coming to the games, but also helping them to make sure that, you know, females in sports get the same privileges as males do. So it's a fantastic community. But what I like about it, it's been hard work. It's not just because they had the idea and that they had a great purpose that everyone just joined. It's not just because they had some famous people that were part of it. I asked them, I said, how did you build this community? I mean, how did you do it so rapidly? And I will never forget this story. They said, what we've done is with our volunteers, we went to every soccer practice in like a 50-mile radius of where our stadium is. And we went to all of them and we shared our story, our purpose on all of those soccer practices. We invited them to join us once. So they went from soccer practice to soccer practice. It wasn't just a post on Instagram. They did the hard work to share the passion face to face with everyone they thought could be interested in their mission. And that was the secret of the success, not just the idea, but the implementation and the hard work behind it. So I was truly impressed with their whole story.
Me too. And I really like that. And I found out this story thanks to you. And I think it's really a great story to share. I said earlier that I had two questions related to what you said about this customer, this people, this group of people being together and finding new solution improvements for customers and then delivering, then transforming that. And you have a 95% rule. And I think that's something that the audience could also profit from it.
It's maybe the most impactful thing that I've spoken about in the past few years. I think the 95-5% rule is very simple. It means that 5% of your customers are like people with bad intentions who want to steal stuff from you, who want to take advantage of your goodness. Max 5%. Usually it's lower. Just let go with 5%. Then you have 95% who are normal, decent people like you and me. Doesn't mean they cannot be critical, but they're just decent people. The problem is that the 5% makes us nervous. We become angry towards those people. And after a while, you spend so much time on the negativity that those 5% produce that everyone starts to think, oh, the average customer equals the 5% pain in the ass people, right? And as a consequence of this, you start to protect yourself against the 5%. So you start to make rules and new procedures to make sure that the 5% can't hurt you anymore. The consequence of that is that you punish the 95%, right? You lower the service qualities for the 95%. The second, that you can mentally accept that 5% of your customers are pain in the ass people, that it will never be good enough, but that you're okay with that, and that you will focus on the 95% and make rules for the 95%, then your customer service will increase dramatically. It is a mindset game. But if you understand that game, you will make different decisions that are better for the majority of your customers.
Thank you, Stephen. We are coming to an end of this discussion of this great book, A Diamond in the Rough. It's really worth it. Our over 100 specific tips. We shared five. Therefore, you have a lot to read now and find out all these examples. And I really suggest from my heart, follow Stephen also on his social media. The videos he's creating are really great. And I want to state I used some of his examples also in my corporate job because what we are selling are stories to create better customer experience. However, I still have one question for you, Stephen. You know me and you know my podcast, the CX Goalkeeper podcast. And therefore, I have the last question. is Stephen, golden nugget is something that we discussed or something new to leave to the great audience of the CX Summit?
Just one golden nugget. I would go for positivity. I think the world needs more positivity, and we underestimate that. And so I would invite you, look at all the communication that you send out, automated invoices, automated emails. Look at every small detail and ask yourself, can't we make it a little bit more positive? Can we not show a little bit more excitement towards our customers? And just spend half a day or a day with that, adding positivity in all your communication, and you will be surprised how much fun it is and how happy you make your customers with that.
Thank you, Stephen, for this great chat. And we go back to Krista. Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure to have this discussion, and I hope you will enjoy this day, the CX Summit.
Thanks, Greg. This was a good conversation. Thanks to you, and I wish everyone a great day. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed the episode, please share the word of mouth. Subscribe it, share it. Until the next episode, please don't forget, we are not in a B2B or B2C business. We are in a human-to-human environment. Thank you.